your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call
is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
All right, boys and girls, welcome to what should be an exciting show today. What is it? It's April 23rd, and you're here on The Wake Up Call. Our guest today, UVA Professor Stephen Rhodes. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Today's topic with the professor, his most recent book, Taking Sex Differences Seriously. Now, Professor, my understanding is that you are a professor of government and foreign affairs.
Right. We changed our name to politics a few years back. But, yes, I'm a political scientist.
But I am curious. This seems like, just by the topic,
right,
seems like more of a sociological aspect. How does a political scientist get involved in a sociological book?
Well, it's true. You would guess maybe sociological, psychology, maybe. But I do public policy within political science, and public policy people kind of wander between disciplines. And so I wrote a book earlier about the economist's view of the world. I'm interested in worldviews and how they affect our approaches to public policy and the way we understand our cultures. And it seemed to me this was an important one, because there's this big divide between people who see sex or gender differences as being socially constructed, or our parents treat us in certain ways, or society treats us in certain ways, and therefore we do things. But that's not widely held, to put it mildly, among people who do biological research, evolutionary psychology, involved with the neurosciences, where they find that there really are significant brain differences between men and women, and that many of these differences show up too early to be socially constructed in the first weeks of life, and they seem to be cross-cultural. They're all the way around the world. So I decided to kind of bring these two worldviews together and see what I made of it, and see whether, if, as I am persuaded, there are significant sex differences, how we should think about our culture and policies differently.
Now, for my research, and this may be simplifying things a little too much, but for my research, some material you sent me, some articles that I read, etc., the book generally says, or seems to focus on, the fact that biology, a lot to do with hormones, drive men and women to do different things. Men prefer competition and breadwinning. Women prefer nurturing, relationships, and housekeeping. And therefore, that makes women happier at home.
Well, that's true. Now, these are averages, but on average, I think that's definitely true. It's particularly dramatic for the women with nurturing of babies, where oxytocin is a nurturing hormone, and women have far more of it, and they have far more neural receptors for it, and nature, when they get pregnant and when they start nursing, gives them more neural receptors. So they just are more attracted to young, helpless babies than men are. Testosterone is actually a turnoff for nurturing. But men are more assertive, or more aggressive. I have this cartoon I love in the book, where it's a Kathy cartoon before she got married, and her boyfriend's there, and Kathy's they're sitting lovingly on the couch, and Kathy says to her boyfriend, "Well, you've lost 1 pound on our, I mean, I've lost 1 pound on our diet so far, and you've lost 6. But the important thing is that." And he interrupts and says, "I win, I win." "Yes, I win." And he jumps up and parades around. And then, of course, she gets very angry and kicks him out. And he says, he's walking away from the door, he says, "Yeah, sure, that's what women want. They want us to show our feelings." You know, this isn't the kind of feeling that women have in mind when they show it. But guys are more competitive, whether they're computer geeks or on average, or whether they're playing football. And I think on average, these are differences. So, yeah, that's an important part of my argument.
But the argument hasn't been accepted so smoothly in a lot of areas.
Right. Well, that's certainly true. It's going to be decades before it will, because I think that you know, much of sociology is based on the idea that we are the way we are because of the way we learn, what we learn from society and our parents. And it's going to take a while, but I think that my view is growing with psychology, for example. There's much more interest on biology than there was 10 or 20 years ago. And I think mine will turn the corner, but it'll take a while because there are a lot of people with different viewpoints, especially in women's studies departments and much of the humanities, who feel threatened by this. And
shouldn't they feel a little threatened by
this? Well, I can understand why they do, but my argument is that they shouldn't. In fact, when I give talks on this these days, I use the title, why taking sex differences seriously would be good for men and better for women. And I say that because in my book, I look particularly at sex, at nurturing, and aggression. And particularly on sex and nurturing, if you, I see these, my courses are flooded by women, far more women than men, and the women just aren't happy with the sexual scene, to put it mildly. The hookup scene, they feel guys are getting what they want from the sexual revolution. What women want is relationships and boyfriends, and they're just not getting them.
They just don't like the walk of shame home.
They don't like the walk of shame, but they don't really enjoy, after experimenting a time or two, they don't enjoy casual sex. And I think that goes very deep. One sign of that is that women with high testosterone, much more testosterone than most women, like sex with a variety of partners more than most women. But most women don't, and our libido is largely concerned by the amount of testosterone we have. And so the whole idea of sexual liberation is an important part of women's liberation, and we're going to behave like the men and enjoy it just as much. It just hasn't played out to be true. And as far as the nurturing is concerned, there are just a lot of women who aren't put together to enjoy working 50-hour weeks when they have a one-year-old at home. And I don't think that our society's acknowledging those feelings and helping them live better lives.
You mentioned a woman in a career or even in a regular job, I guess, an hourly job, not being excited about working a 50-hour week when she has a one-year-old at home. What about the male? I realize that in our society today, we have many more female single parents than male single parents. But is the male single parent who is in a similar situation, is he equally unhappy? And isn't that based on more of a personal choice that isn't necessarily biological, but just based on being pulled in a variety of ways?
I don't think so. I mean, first of all, there aren't nearly as many of them. As you say, if you look at couples that where one of them, they were both working, and one of them decides one of us should quit and stay home with the kids, it's 58 to 1. It's the woman over the man. Now, if you look at who makes the most money, women in two-career families make the most money more than a third of the time. So you might think if it's just, you know, just reasonable, we're both the same, what makes sense, that the man would be staying home far more than less than 2%, which is what it is. And I think the reason is they both kind of have a sense that the woman likes this work more and does a better job with it. The babies also have a preference. When babies cry, they're usually not indifferent between whether mother or father picks them up. And so families, you know, it's amazing when the law schools and med schools have kind of been revolutionized since 1960, you know, almost 50% women, but this thing you think might be the easiest to change, just who's going to stay home? That hasn't changed much at all. And I think that's because these differences do go deep, and there's signs of it all over the place. If you look at Sweden, which has tried to encourage different kinds of, tried to encourage men to do more child care for decades. You know, if you look at who's, after spending some time home, who's more unhappy about going back to work, it's the woman. They even had one study where they only studied men who took parental leave right after the kid was born and who said before the birth, I want to be the principal caretaker of my kid. And they went into those homes and saw what happened, and they found the woman was the principal caretaker of those kids. She spent more time with it. She talked to them more. She cooed with them more. Guys get more interested in kids after 18 months when they can play with them more and when they can read them something or teach them something. And this just seems to be something cross-cultural. And I also think it's important to realize that what men do is different than what women do. They have a different style of nurturing, so different than some scholars call it activation rather than nurturing. they're kind of using toys in unusual ways and bouncing the kid around and encouraging them to explore the outside world. And these are both important kinds of nurturing, but as far as day-by-day, hour-by-hour kind, what women do is more important with young kids.
Sounds like you're saying that's more of a protective sort of nurturing from the female aspect.
Right, a kind of right, make sure no harm comes to them. But the guy is more, fathers are more typically interested in having them explore, take chances, ventures, you know, just boisterous, unexpected stuff. And I think this one scholar thinks it's important that each parent do different rather than both do the same. Because then if your kid feels, I need nurturing, I need comforting, I'm just not feeling very well, he knows who to go to. If he feels like, I need boisterous play, I need something to excite me, I'm bored, he goes to the dad. The father is more interested in having explore. In a typical situation on a playground is for the mother, when the kid's in the jungle gym, for the mother to say as the kid starts climbing, don't go too high, be careful. And the dad's saying, see if you can get to the top. You know, and both those things are important. You know, at some point he's got to get to the top. And at some point he's got to be careful as he gets to the top. And I think there are different styles and they're both important.
All right, we're with University of Virginia professor Stephen Rhodes talking about his most recent book, Taking Sex Differences Seriously. Professor, I have to say, it's 11:16 here. So after my initial little blurb, we've been talking for 13 minutes or so. Everything that I read about this was what a controversial speaker you were, how so many women were going to get fired up about all your work. To me, you're just kind of making me nod my head. I certainly don't take myself, consider myself as someone who might follow some of these same views.
Right.
But, you know, the piece about dad saying climb to the top and mom saying don't hurt yourself, not that I necessarily have memories of that, but I certainly have friends with kids and I can see it wherever we go.
Yeah. Well, I think this is why I love these shows, because I like them to get me rather than what they read about me. you know, if you look on Amazon, it's a controversial book, but a lot more people like it than not. And the one I like the most, who kind of anonymously writes in, is says young urban liberal female, and it sounds right to me. And that's the way the title of the comments are. I don't think it's an ideological issue. I think most women realize that they're more... they care. They think more about their kid at work than the father does. I mean, we've got all kinds of studies about this. They feel stress and they feel, they feel guilt sometimes. And I think these are real differences. And if we don't take them seriously, if we just pretend they're not there, we're not going to be able to design cultures and policies to the extent we can. And a lot of these things are beyond design, but we can certainly control male aggression better than we do if we realize that men are more naturally aggressive. That around the world, 28 men kill another man for every woman who kills another woman. That's not socially constructed. No societies are saying go out and kill citizens. There's something in men that's worrisome in that regard, and we've got to control or channel it, maybe through sports, maybe you haven't joined the Marines, whatever, but that we have to deal with the fact it's there. And the fact that women in time don't like casual sex, and that they, I mean, I ask my students, and that most of the women say, I'd rather be dating in the 50s than now. They don't get any dates. Guys are just interested in sex.
I'm not going to make the comment that came to mind. Let me ask you a little bit, because you said something several times about research or scientific facts sort of thing. Two questions that hopefully you can answer somewhat together. One, I'm curious as to where the scientific facts come from, who the organizations are, so that listeners can make some sort of determination as to whether or not these are fall under the believable category or whether they're really offset in terms of the mainstream scientists and documentation. And then secondly, you're married and you have sons, but you don't have any daughters. Did that play a role in your personal research into the book?
The first one, I'll take the second one first. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I've always been kind of interested in women and how they They are, and I certainly, in my classes, I see women mostly. I mean, it's another sex difference. I teach political economy. Classes are typically two-thirds men. I teach this, and they're three-quarters women, and the women are on the edge of their seats. You know, this work-career stuff and the sexuality, dating stuff is on the center of their mind in all their conversations. And so I don't think so. As far as who the research is from, it's absolutely... Now, there's going to be differences about what to do about the sex differences. The people who do the research. I mean, they're going to.
That's fine. I guess what.
But the sex differences themselves. Yeah,
you know, we're not getting quote numbers and facts and figures from.
Right.
You know, the Finnish extreme, and they're the only people saying it.
Yeah,
now, are you
right.
getting this from all over the world, from
right.
both right and left hand sides
yes.
of the argument, et cetera?
Yes. Right. Absolutely. And. And one sign of it is that most of the people doing this research are women. So it's a scientific, you know, it's close, but it's lots of the most prominent people doing sex differences research from a biological angle are women. And let me just take you through one of the pieces that I think is the most impressive. It's a chaired professor at the University of North Carolina, Richard Udry. He's won national awards for his work with adolescents from the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health. And what he does is an ingenious study, because it's a nice way to separate nature from nurture. He found blood samples that are 25 years old that were taken from mothers when they were pregnant with daughters. And he looks at the amount of testosterone in the second trimester of those blood samples. And then he finds out how those daughters were raised. Did they encourage you to cook? Did they encourage you to wear dresses and jewelry? Or did they encourage you to play sports and science and math and to fix things? He controls for all the social or the nurturing angle, and he finds that the amount of testosterone you were exposed to in the womb makes you more masculine if it's high. In other words, you're more interested in careers, you're less interested in babies, you're more assertive, you're just more androgynous than most women, more like men if you were exposed in the womb to more testosterone. So this is pretty powerful evidence. There's something biological going on in addition to the societal.
All right, 11:21 here on the Wake Up Call with Professor Stephen Rhodes. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley today. Chance of showers, highs 75 to 80. Partly cloudy tonight, lows 45 to 50. Sunny tomorrow, highs back up 70-75. Right now it's partly cloudy in the valley and 66 and pretty clear. Everywhere else, 66 in Lynchburg, 62 in Richmond, 65 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And we want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They feature over 130 styles of sandals, hiking and trail running shoes for women, men, and kids. And to go with your footwear, Blue Ridge also has a selection of socks and trekking poles. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is where outdoor spring adventures have begun for over 30 years. In the Bear Crow Shopping Center, Charlottesville, at Wintergreen, in Richmond, and at BRMS.com. And WNRN wants to remind those of you who made pledges to the recent fundraiser, but who haven't paid them yet, to please do so as soon as possible. The fund drive was our most successful ever. But now we have to collect on all your pledges. People who can take your payment and help with the premiums are here until 7 p.m. on weekdays and sometimes later. And on weekends, if you call first, we can help you. We're at 2250 Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville behind the IVN. The zip code is 22903 if you're mailing it in. Now, the first round of written reminders to go with those unpaid pledges are going out this week. Thanks again to everyone who's already honored their pledge to help us reach nearly 90% collection rate on the over $88,000 pledged. All right. Let's get back in action with Professor Stephen Rhodes. Professor, you look a little thirsty. Maybe we can get Catherine to come in here and get you a drink.
I'm here, Rick.
Yeah. Well, I'm giving you a hard time. We have barely gotten anything done at this point. We're just now we're going to get into this stuff. Write down the phone number. Stretch out your fingers. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Because now we're actually going to get into what I think might be the controversial part. You say feminism has actually done a disservice to women.
That's correct.
I'm curious as to how that's possible.
Yeah. Well, they certainly didn't mean to. They certainly didn't mean to. But I think it's beyond question that sexual liberation was considered an important part of women's liberation. And I can show you studies that show that teen girls are much more likely than teen boys to say they regret their sexual experiences to date. They wish they waited longer to have sex. That and what's interesting is even when someone's really sexually active, you might say these are the women who are really into it. If you look a couple years later, after they've done it, they tire of it in a way boys don't. And they just say, you know, I can't be like the guys. I don't have any principled objection to it. I don't have any religious objection to it. But I just feel used, and if these guys sleep with me and they have no interest in me in the morning, it just doesn't work for me. But they don't realize that doesn't seem to work for almost any woman. Now,
isn't feminism more than just release?
Absolutely. And this let me talk a little bit about careers. Because here, it's the career family thing and maternity that really, I think, where feminism has done women wrong. I mean, if you think about what's distinctive about women, how they like to describe themselves and how they are described by others, what's different? It would be something about nurturing and being generous and trying to be nice to people. And I think feminists realize, yeah, but the problem is if you do this, then people are going to push you around. And you get pushed around your marriage and so on. You've got to be more aggressive. You've got to be more assertive. You've got to get your own funds or you're not going to be happily married. And the evidence is that's exactly wrong. A recent study by my colleagues in sociology, Nock and Wilcox, show that the most happily married women are ones who say that their husband gives them lots of love and affection, and the husbands who give their wives the most love and affection don't work at all. Now, this can't mean, therefore, they're being pushed around and tyrannized by the men. I think that that feminism worries about this nurturing. Let me give you a nice anecdote. I think, and depending on how your listeners feel about it, will tell you a lot about them. Because part of my argument is there's high testosterone women and there's other women. And we really got to realize that they think differently. But here's what happened. It was just a Forest Service study of recreation. How do you like to recreate outdoors? A simple little study. Well, they asked the guys, and they said, I like to go fishing, I like to go hunting, I like to play golf. But, you know, I like to. They asked the women, and lots of them said, they didn't say, I like to. They said, we like to do this. We like to go boating. We like to go swimming. And they didn't plan for this to have anything to do with gender at all. But they thought, geez, I'm not sure they're answering the same question here. And one woman said, well, we like to go boating. And then the guy looks at his next question. He says, what do you like about boating? And she says, nothing. I get seasick. But then she goes on to say, but it's fun for the kids. They're out in their tubes out behind, and they're having a great time splashing around. And it's just kind of fun. And, you know, I think this is a not untypical female reaction, that they're not happy unless everybody around them is happy. All their friends and their family are happy. Now, you could say, as I would say, isn't this wonderful? It'd be nice if guys could learn a little bit of that. Or you could say, this is awful. They don't even know who they are. They don't even know what they like. They're so wrapped up in other people. But whether you like it or not, that's a difference. Little babies are more empathetic if they're female than if they're male. And that's just part of the nature. Now, if feminism wants to, I think, get them out of that, get them in the careers and so on. And I have no objection at all to women having complete access to careers. But they all look within themselves, what means most to me, what makes me most happy, and most women say it's their relationship with their family, their relationship with their friends that makes them far more happy than their careers.
All right, feel free to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Catherine's out there today patching you through to the main office here with Professor Stephen Rhodes as we talk about sex differences and how it's a little more than just genitalia. I do want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support today. They have been Seville Reader's Choice for Burgers and rated by Zagat Restaurant Survey for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and they're open until 10 on Fridays and Saturdays. Five Guys Burgers and Fries is behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center and now open in the Hollymead Town Center. Coming soon to the Downtown Mall, Charlottesville, 975 Guys. You know, you made me laugh with that comment about what do I like about boating. And it makes it sound like it's kind of a silly manner. But you also want to take this theory, and I guess in your mind it's more than a theory. It's just uncovering the truths and the facts. But you want to apply it to some of the public policy and cultural practices that are more a part of the political science professor that I thought I might get when I started reading about it.
Right. Well, that's true. And let me just mention a couple. And I think a lot of it's cultural. I mean, the sexual side is a lot of cultural. It's getting women to really understand, you know, what they like and are they different than what men are. But some of it is policy oriented. And let me give you an example that I think is particularly unfortunate. Almost a whole generation ago, there was someone by the name of Felice Schwartz who worked for Catalyst, which is an outfit that its whole purpose is to advance women's interest within business. And she proposed a career family track for businesses. Now, and she said, you know, a lot of women don't want to work 50 hours a week, but they'd like to keep their career going, and it wouldn't be nice if they could, you know, they might settle for middle management in the medium term, but they'd keep their hand in, and they'd have much more time with their kids, and that's what they want. It was outrage among mainstream feminists. Betty Friedan, National Organization of Women, wrote in, said that if any business does this, we will sue them. That instead of talking about this, we should be asking why men aren't doing half the housework and, you know, all kinds of other things that aren't going to get you anywhere. If you ask women what they would like, they usually, most of them, say, I'd like a part-time job that's significant. Here was somebody who proposed it, and anybody who tries it, the kind of androgynous feminists say, we're going to take you to court. Now, I think that's anti-women, and I would say we should realize that this is nothing the matter with that. Nothing the matter if, on average, men and women make different decisions about work and family. Now, the other area where I put a lot of emphasis on policy is Title IX, and this will probably get me in trouble with your listeners, because everybody loves Title IX. You know, how could you be against women playing sports? I'm not against women playing sports, but if budgets are tight, lots of male sports have had to been cut. You know, over 40 collegiate wrestling teams have been abolished since Title IX, for example, men. Now, I'm concerned about male aggression. I think one way to deal with it, we know what the source of male aggression is. It is when you go into, when you have unsupervised peer groups of males, young teenage males. That's the source. All right, so what we got to do is get him out of these unsupervised, get him into supervised. Get him on the wrestling mat. You think you're so tough. Let's see how tough you are. And have rules and have and so on. So I think that sports, first of all, I think guys have a harder time making friendships without activities. So I think sports are more important in a sense to guys, but they're also more important to us in society because we want to do something about male aggression. And we have to realize that a part of it is these unsupervised groups. We got to get more men playing tough sports so that the tough guys aren't tough on the street. So I have a whole chapter on this in my book, Taking Sex Differences Seriously.
You know, I understand the part about the male aggression being released through sports, but, you know, you don't have to look very hard to find, whether you're talking about college sports or pro sports, to find groups of aggressive sports, hang on, caller, groups of aggressive sports where they're still getting in all kinds of trouble.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. In fact, all your questions are good, Rick.
I'm on my ball today.
You're on your ball today, and you're getting out the important parts because you give me a chance to come back at quite common and reasonable critiques. And here's the answer to that. Who plays football? Do they tend to be guys who are skinny with skinny necks? No. You know, when you see one of these guys with thick necks and big, broad shoulders, that's a sign of high testosterone. That's a sign of aggression in some sense. When you ask, well, do football players get in more trouble than other people, you have to say, would they be getting in still more trouble if they weren't playing football? Because these are the people who play aggressive, tough sports are kind of primed in some sense through the amount of testosterone they have to be assertive, to be aggressive. Now, so I think we have to, and I think there's a good statistical magazine that has a good article on this that says that pro football players are less aggressive if you control for all the other variables, including the kind of community they grew up in.
Yeah, we're saying that we sort of, if we didn't have football for them, they'd get in even more trouble?
Well, yeah, exactly. They'd be in fights, they'd be in gangs. That's my guess anyway. What's pretty clear, what's more clear than that, because that's more of my hypothesis. And there's this one good statistical study. But what is very clear is when fathers wrestle with their young boys on the living room floor, they aren't teaching them aggression. They're teaching them to control aggression, because what they're saying is don't fight, don't bite,
right,
stay
no
away
biting,
from my eyes,
no kicking below the belt.
Exactly. And guys who don't have fathers who do that with them, they get on the playground in elementary school, and they think it's a real fight, and they start kicking and biting, and nobody wants to play with them. So we have, this comes out of the National Institute of Health. And I think this is important, because a lot of women probably see their husbands wrestling with him. They're saying, is he teaching him to be aggressive? I can tell you that science, hard science, says no. He's teaching him to be less aggressive. He's teaching him to control his aggression within a rule-bound environment. This is how you do rough-and-tumble play, which boys around the world do.
All right, let's take our caller.
H.
No, Jeremy had no patience. Told you to hang on, Jeremy. Dial us back, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. You can talk to Catherine. In fact, her in-laws are here checking up on her, making sure that she's actually going where she says she's going on Sunday afternoons. All right, I do see the phone line is in use at the moment, so I'll try not to. Actually, you know, why don't we do this real quick? We'll talk to Kristen. Kristen, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for calling.
Right. I have a question for Professor Rhodes. It seems, and correct me if I'm misinterpreting your stance here, but it seems like when you're talking about the inherent biological differences or social differences between men and women, your premise is kind of, you know, they need to get out of the workplace if they're not happy there. And as a early, you know, woman in my early 30s, basically my entire peer group is either making the decision to start families or canning the decision to have a family and making the decision to go to their career. And so I'm seeing a lot of my peers make the choices around family, including myself. And it's not that I'm seeing women saying, you know, I hate work. You know, and I really want to stay home and change diapers so much as I can't do it all and something's got to give. And I guess my concern with this philosophy is that, you know, if we're saying that women just aren't cut out to be workers or, you know, because of biological differences, then are we giving corporate America or the American workplace the ability to opt out from making more work-life friendly, you know, having an approach to having a work-life balance, either.
You mean the 9-to-5 movie thing where they have flexible hours and child care at work and that kind of thing?
Sure, telecommuting or, I mean, there are any number of options.
All right, very cool question. Thanks. Keep listening.
Okay.
Yeah, Kristen, thanks for the question. First of all, I think, remember, I talked about this study, this proposal by Felice Schwartz, and we couldn't get the halftime work and nurturing because androgynous feminists who want men and women to do everything equally got in the way. And I think, so I'm not opposed to women working. I will say this, there's good studies of this both in Europe and this U.S. that just ideally, what would women like to do? And ideally, about 20% don't want to work at all. They love the traditional situation. They love being home with the family and making the house feel like a home. And they're so grateful to their husbands they make enough money to make that possible. There's another 20% who are full-blown careers. 60% are kind of in the middle. They would like to, you know, it depends on the age of the kid. They'll stay home a while. They'd like to be able to get back in. Maybe they like these halftime opportunities. And I think we should try to structure a world where everybody gets what they want to the extent we can. But here's the problem. I could always win a lot more women's friends if I said at the end of this that what we need is more daycare. I have a whole chapter on daycare, and you probably sense this, most mothers sense this, that the daycare is not as good as their care. And there's now good evidence on this by the best kind of sciences that try to control for the quality of the daycare and control for the mother-infant interaction and so on, which show that you're going to get, on average, a much more aggressive kid by the time he gets to kindergarten if they spend a lot of time in daycare. One study, and a very good study, says if they're in daycare or away from maternal care less than 10 hours a week, you get 6% aggressive kids and acting out kids and bullying kids when they're 6 or 7. If you're over 30 hours in daycare, you get 17%. Not 6, but 17%. Now, all of us have an interest in that. Obviously, the teacher's not going to be able to teach as much if the kids are out of control. So we should just look at the evidence and say, well, wait a minute, maybe we should make it more possible for women to have a tax breaks if they have kids, especially under two. Not women, women and men, families have tax breaks if they have kids under two so they can stay home.
Why not just women? I mean, you know, not that it would have helped me any, but
right.
But certainly there are lots of men who give up their responsibilities or ignore their responsibilities and leave women to do the single parent issue.
You mean even though they're married, they leave the woman to do most of it
or all of it? No, I'm talking about men who father a child and then just, you know, blow it off.
Right. Well, yeah, that happens too much. And here's what I would propose. Instead of subsidized daycare, I would propose that we do much more in the way of giving dependents allowances, big ones, you know, not a couple thousand dollars, but $10,000 or more, to people who have kids, whether they're single parents or whether they're married, whether the wife wants to go back and work. If she wants to go back and work, she'll have more money to pay for daycare. If she doesn't want to go back to work, she doesn't get forced back to work by subsidizing daycare of middle-class women. I mean, after all, they have less money. The woman who maybe they both had $80,000 and the wife made $30,000 and she quits, and the same couple where the wife doesn't quit, they've got more money. Why should they get a subsidy to put their kid in daycare if it looks as if daycare is not good for kids? We should have, at the very least, be neutral. Give everybody with a kid the same benefit, the same cash benefit, and end the subsidies of daycare, which I think, if you look at the evidence, I got a whole chapter in my book, are not good for kids.
By the way, the book is called Taking Sex Differences Seriously, as we talk with University of Virginia professor Stephen Rhodes here on the Wake Up Call, 11:41.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, it's the 2006 music issue. Local critics from various aspects of the music industry look at local musicians, and the musicians get to reply. This week's home expert gives advice on dealing with pesky ants. And will the UVA talent pool be diluted by the new initiative guaranteeing B-plus and above community college students admission into state universities? Oh, we also want to thank 4-5-Fix. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 4-5-Fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no-obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 4-5-Fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And although it's 11:42, hang around until noon, because George Bell will be here for Les Temps Perdue. It's the best of the 80s and 90s alternative. No Debbie Gibson Meatloaf or Asia. I went to their concert. But you will hear Screaming Trees, Bjork, and The Cult, and requests are always welcome. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, back to the professor. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Professor, I got a question for you, but you made mention of diaper changing.
Right. Well, this will get me more trouble, Rick, but we got to get some more controversy here. There is evidence that women like not just child care more, but they like homemaking more. They like making the house look pretty. I mean, my students don't disagree with this. Most of the male students' places are pig pens. The women's aren't as pig penny. And this, you know, this isn't therefore because she expects me to do everything. Guys have different priorities. They don't care as much about how the house looks. Now, one sign of this is when women say they want more help with homemaking, do they really mean, well, I designed the furniture and put all the decorating in the living room. The least you could do is do the dining room. That's not what they mean. They want to do every room. My wife wants to do even rooms where she hardly ever goes in. And I think this is a sign of something. Women care more about their environment. And one sign of it is that there hasn't been much change in kind of domesticity in the last 80 years. If you look, who's more interested in sewing and cooking and these things? Women are. Now, who knows where it comes from. One sign that it might, even this might have a biological component is this. There's a kind of woman who's born because of a defect without any testosterone. These kinds of women are very, very interested in homemaking, in housekeeping, in cooking, in babies. It's another sign, I think, that even at that level. Now, here's the most mind-boggling of all. Your caller, Christian, mentioned diapers, and here's the situation. I've got my own data of women and men who are trying to get tenure, hard-charging careerists, assistant professors with kids under two. And I asked the women and the men how much they like to do various child care activities. The women like everyone, except for one, more than the men like them, on average. And the women even like, more often than they dislike, changing diapers. Now, I asked my wife about this. She's got a PhD, and she's taught most of her life. I said, is it true do women like changing diapers? Because most of the men said they didn't like changing diapers. She said, yeah, I like changing diapers. It's not just changing the diaper that the baby's kicking his legs around and squirming around and smiling at you. It's I would have said I like diaper changing. So, look, all I'm saying is not it's the most important thing they do or they love it a whole lot, but just consider the possibility that even diaper changing you like more than your husband does. And whether that, what does that mean about who should do what? It's complicated, but it means something.
Carol Ann, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Carol Ann from Charlottesville. Bring it on.
Hi. I am also a student at the University of Virginia and studying at the graduate level. Philosophy and religion. And there was a woman named Laura Riding Jackson who wrote in the 1930s about this issue. She has a book called The Word Woman. And she had this really profound comment, I think, which is that society itself is not really set up, and by society she means, I think, the world of work, is not really set up to be a place where men and women function equally well. And this is from her book. She says, society as we have society is not an all-inclusive of human functioning. It's a pattern conceived and developed by men, a vehicle and instrument of objectives and ambitions arising out of the masculine personality. So her is that women should not really strive to be succeeding in the workplace because the workplace is a place designed and conceived by men for men and really encapsulating male concerns. And she thinks that when we really have to restructure society to be more human before women should have ambitions there. And I think that, you know, this was written in the 1930s prior to the feminist movement. But I guess I just wanted you to comment. You've talked a lot about biology, but I think the differences between men and women are actually much deeper than that.
Hey, Carol Ann, you're the perfect female listener for me. I hope you listen every Sunday. All right, Professor, fire away. Thanks, Carol Ann.
Well, I certainly agree that things could change in society that would make women's lives better. And I certainly agree that the workplace was designed for women, I mean, for men. And that's why I'm in favor of more part-time work that's significant and think Felice Schwartz, we should go back and pick up on her suggestion. I'm also in favor of half-time tenure positions for faculty. It's just impossible for these women trying to get tenure when they're in their early 30s. They'd like to have a family and they're so busy. I agree with that in large measure, but I also think that, you know, one big difference. Because sometimes feminists will come back at me and say, you know, women have always worked. You act as if it's unusual for a woman to work. I mean, women were working for years. It's only a small part of history that they haven't worked outside the home. They were gathering berries and so on. And this is all true. But when they were gathering berries, they had their kid on their hip in a sling. What's different today is that work means you have to be away from your baby for 50, sometimes 60-hour weeks. And now, as you say, why does that have to be? Well, it doesn't have to be, but probably if you want to reach the top of your profession, it probably is going to be true. Lawyers, young lawyers work long hours. Young doctors work long hours. Young professors work long hours. And the problem is, I don't know what's a problem. It's only a problem if you don't think about it right, is that women don't like this. If I can get everybody to agree that women are more troubled by this, they're more worried about it, and let me tell you another anecdote because I think it's important. It's someone by the name of Madeline Coonan, who was a governor of Vermont, and she writes an autobiography after she finished, and she had young children when she was when she wrote this. All right, so she says, in her autobiography, she says, I felt a stab in my chest every single day because I felt I should be doing two things and I could only do one. All I could do is just put it out of my mind. There was nothing to do about it. Deal with the pressure and the stress is what best I could. male governors don't feel the stab in the chest, I don't think. I think that's biological. And the point
only
is,
for their political behavior, not necessarily
right,
for their familial.
Right. So they don't feel it. And if we acknowledge the fact that women, even the most achieving women, it's sad and so on. And she, it's not just the guilt, although guilt was a part of it, because she also said, when I came home once and the kids had already blown out the birthday candles, I made them light it again so I could see it. That's not for the kids' benefit. She wants to eat the cake. That's for the mother's benefit. Mothers care more about seeing the first steps, hearing the first words, than fathers do. And we got to design a world in which we realize they're different, darn it all, and they shouldn't have to work. They should be able to have a career if they want one, and they shouldn't have to work these long hours. But in here's the problem. Again, now we'll say, well, look, if you have a work-family track, almost all the people who take it will be women, and then women will be stigmatized, and they'll all say they're not interested in jobs, and nobody will want to hire them. Well,
look, who cares if they're happy?
If they're happy, that's the thing. I mean, I think feminism is wants to design a world in which they think women will be happy, and in fact, it will make high testosterone women happy, and most of them who are advocating this, of course, who are all the editors? Who are all the careerists? Who are all the activists? There tend to be really assertive, energetic people who have high testosterone. They're not typical women.
All right, 11:50 here on the Wake Up Call with University Professor Stephen Rhodes as we talk about sex differences. His most recent book, Taking Sex Differences Seriously. I assume we can buy it at Amazon.com or other places.
Yeah.
Probably at the University of Virginia bookstore.
Should have it there.
If you're joining us late and you've decided that this is something you wish you'd joined us early, www.seavillepodcast.com. You can catch it. Sean Tubbs usually has it up a couple hours after noon. www.seavillepodcast.com, especially people like Carol Ann. Spread it around to your fellow female and male university students to go check it out. 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Question or comment? Professor, you know, we talked about some public policy issues. We talked about women either by choice, you know, whether it's biological, whether it's emotional, whatever. Fewer women in the workplace or in a lesser role in the workplace. Doesn't this make more families in the poverty area? Doesn't this create more health insurance problems? Doesn't this leave less money for children's education? It seems like there are other great deal of other problems that men and women may be trying to avoid by doing something that they don't particularly want to do, get up and go to work.
Well, that's true. And obviously, if in some situations women have to work, there's no doubt about that. But on the other hand, you know, let's be realistic. We are the people say in the 50s you could get away with one income, but you can't now. Well, in the 50s, after controlling for inflation, male earners' median income was 30% less than it is now.
So right? we didn't have three cars and two homes.
Well, that's right. I mean, really, this is what I'm saying.
Caller, hang on.
And a lot of people think that, well, gee, I want to do what's best for my kid. He needs the French lessons. He needs to go to camp. He needs this and that. I'm just telling you, look at the research. The research shows he needs you most of all. After all, these daycare studies control for income. They control for, I'd have so much more income, I could give some more advantages if I worked, and it doesn't seem to make as much a difference. But these are good questions, and a lot of these things have to be wrestled out, but we have to start with a view that men and women are put together differently on average.
All right, we have Elizabeth, who's visiting Charlottesville from Jacksonville, Florida. Is that right?
Yes.
How are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm glad you chose to spend your vacation and listening to the wake-up call.
I wanted to just make a comment about I'm raising three sons, and I've chosen to homeschool my boys because I think that you're right about group aggression, and I think that schools are places that really nurture aggressive tendencies among boys because they're undersupervised. I think that women, and I'm part of a homeschool movement, and women are really at the center of this movement, not men, and it's because women are more likely to choose to not work and to be home. with their children. I also work with a doula, as a doula, so I, you know, help women when their babies are born. And I see women making these choices all the time, you know, children over against work. I think you're absolutely right that most women would like to work part-time if they have kids, kind of have a both-and life. But we find that a little bit harder to do mentally. I guess I wanted you to comment a little bit about, you talked about aggression in daycare, but what about in schools? And how the presence of women, I mean, women are teaching at the elementary level, by and large, and I actually think that it might be good for boys if they have more male teachers to kind of know how to channel their aggression. And I also just wanted to make a comment about, I think that households are run best by women. Women have this sort of ordering principle. They're able to order domains in ways that men aren't. And I think men function best if they sort of let that happen. So, anyway. That's all.
Hey, Elizabeth, thanks for calling. You know, you can listen to us even from Florida on WNRN.RLC.net.
Oh, good.
I love it when smart women call in and participate in the program. Have a great day.
Well, Elizabeth, first of all, I think you're right. Well, one sign that women are better at kind of homemaking and dealing with kids is they do two things at once better than men do, and we've got some evidence on that. But,
yes, we do.
But I also think... you know, we should really look at the question, women want to work, women want careers. I think lots of times husbands want the woman to work. I mean, lots of times they say, well, we can't afford it, you can't quit. And they don't realize how the kind of emotional toil this takes on their wives. And I think if we didn't have this androgynous outlook, they might more. The only thing I might disagree a little bit with you on is I don't know whether you... I think there's too much aggression in kids, in schools, certainly. And I think... part of it is to do with women teachers, but I think it's something else, too. You know, it's important that we realize that competitiveness and wanting to win is not aggression. And I think that one of the reasons boys do so poorly in schools these days is that they do have mainly female teachers, and they assign books that they simply aren't interested in. They don't assign war stories and adventures nearly as much as they used to because they're afraid this will make the guys aggressive. Now, what it'll do is it'll teach them to read. Because it's a fact, whether you like it or not, that if you assign books to the little girls, they usually read them. If you assign books to little boys, they read them if they're interested in them. And they're not interested in the kind of touchy-feely, you know, isn't this a nice, happy family books. You know, their pretend play is all about heroes and conquering this and winning this and that. And the girls' pretend play and their pretend stories are usually about families and so on. And we got to give some reading material and also divide the class into two and have them compete with each other. Maybe we ought to have different single-sex schools because that will make boys interested in learning how to spell. If they can beat the other side of the room, that's all it takes. There's a little more competition, and I think women kind of shy away from it, and they kind of link it with aggression in a way that they shouldn't.
All right, we are finishing up the hour with our guest, University Professor Stephen Rhodes. I do want to thank those of you listening today. WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg is our official piece, at least for the moment. I want to thank those on 95.9, our new Lexington station. And I also need to thank Wild Greens for their support. They are an American grill serving contemporary and nostalgic American food in a casual dining atmosphere. Wild Greens, open for lunch and for dinner 7 days a week. Sunday brunch, 11:30 till 2, in the north wing of the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. Professor, just about 60, 90 seconds left. I'm curious, you know, we spent all this time talking about everything sort of in a large macro vision.
Mm-hmm.
What are the women who don't feel as though this applies to them? What are they supposed to do about this?
Well, they should, first of all, realize that I do acknowledge them in the book. In other words, I do realize that there are lots of women who are just as career-oriented as men, and they should have the opportunity to have good careers. And they still will tend to be more baby-oriented than most men are. But still, in other words, I'm absolutely in favor of equal opportunity. Now, there is one way that they're going to be hurt, because if we go around and think that women want careers just as much as men, and we say, oh, well, look at the number of CEOs. There are far more men than women. This gives women who really do want to be CEOs a big advantage, because we're constantly putting pressure on people to promote them as if You see what I mean? In other words, there aren't as many in the pool, but the ones who are in the pool get a big advantage. And there's no question that career-oriented women are hurt in some sense by more traditional women, because people feel that they might quit. Or why give her training? She might quit like that one did.
And she's going to get pregnant and be gone for
exactly.
6 months.
So these generalizations are going to hurt at the margin some women. But most women are going to be helped, not hurt, if they can design lives with part career, part family, and have that career amount to something. And we can only get there if we are willing to say androgynous feminism got it wrong, that on average, most women, I'll end with this. If you ask women how important various things are to their happiness, their children, on a scale of 1 to 10, their children, they give a 10. 86% of women give their children a 10. 30% of them give their career a 10. Now, that tells you something. It tells you that, and even if you ask women who don't have kids and who are and aren't married, you might say, well, these are the career-oriented women. You ask them what's most important to their happiness, 33% say their relationship with their mother. 22% say their relationship with friends. 11% say their careers. Women are connecting creatures. They want, to ignore this is anti-women, in my opinion.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
That was great fun, Rick.
I appreciate it very much. Boys and girls, I wish I knew what was going to be on next week. I'll know by Sunday. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Day, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The Wake Up Call is produced by Katherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.